Welcome to Counter Apologetics.
Welcome to Counter Apologetics. I'm your host, Emerson Green. And today we'll be discussing Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa is a cultural symbol of compassion, love for the poor, and dedication of one's life to the greater good. When most people see her, they think of sacrifice and selflessness. They think, well, sure, maybe the Catholic Church does rape children and cover it up, and the Catholic Church uses their money to go to Africa and preach that condom use is sinful in the midst of an AIDS epidemic, and in the past they sold indulgences, but, you know, they do have Mother Teresa.
The Blessed Mother Teresa was a rare and unique woman who lived to serve a higher purpose. She continues to inspire countless individuals long after her passing and serves as a beacon that represents the best of humanity.
As you may or may not have heard, this portrait of Mother Teresa as a moral icon is completely at odds with her actions and her own words. If you apply the slightest amount of skepticism and do the smallest amount of research, you'll find that Mother Teresa was a fraud who behaved like a masochist and whose life's work greatly increased the amount of suffering in the world. She had no interest whatsoever in alleviating poverty or suffering, per her own words. She took millions of dollars in donations, managed it suspiciously, and didn't spend it on the poor. Her medical practices were horrifying and may have even intentionally increased suffering for religious reasons. She kept questionable political contacts, to put it mildly, and she was dogmatically opposed to divorce and the use of contraceptives. She was only interested in converting people to the Catholic faith. Nothing more.
Mother Teresa's money is mostly spent on religious activities and not on the poor.
If you think that racking up the number of Catholics in the world is an imperative, then you probably won't find much of what Teresa did objectionable. However, if you care about alleviating suffering, helping the poor, or women's rights, you may be interested in what I'm about to say. If you were laboring under the delusion that she was a moral woman who dedicated her life to humanitarian work, and we should all venerate her regardless of our religious persuasion, I hope I can disabuse you of that notion.
She wasn't in the least bit interested in alleviating poverty. I would say it was a certainty that millions of people died because of her work. And millions more were made poorer, stupider, more sick, more diseased, more fearful, and more ignorant.
Over the years, Mother Teresa's clinics received millions of dollars in donations, yet their conditions were appalling. They reused needles with no sterilization. There was a disturbing shortage of medical care and even basic nutrition, as well as a very intentional lack of painkillers. Her patients lay in agony in hammocks or stretcher beds, many with their heads shaved, and she would often baptize Hindu patients without their consent or understanding.
This so-called home for the dying, which is her flagship home, is the grimmest place imaginable. Mother Teresa's order does not provide for proper beds in the home. They're little hammocks. There's a communal toilet that people have to defecate in presence of each other. They are not allowed visits from their friends or relatives. Very strange. They have to lie in the bed or sit in the bed consistently.
Mother Teresa once told a cancer patient that, quote, pain means Jesus is near you, and that suffering is an opportunity to share in the passion of Christ. Mother Teresa recounted herself that she compared suffering to kisses from Jesus, to which a patient replied, please tell Jesus to stop kissing me. But as with all her suffering patients, there was no mercy.
It was her obsession with suffering and her obsession that people need to suffer in order to come close to Jesus.
Of course, whenever she was sick, she flew straight to a Western hospital and received only the best care. She never claimed to want to alleviate poverty, and she said as much whenever anyone asked. She said that poverty and suffering were gifts from God and brought you closer to Jesus. She denied medical care to her residents in her House of the Dying, while never sparing any expense on her own medical care, getting the best Western medicine and treatment that was available. She used much of the millions of dollars in donations she received to build nunneries, often bearing her own name, which is humble as usual for her, and they do nothing but train more missionaries.
I don't think that's what people thought they were giving them money for, was the building of religious institutions to hire and train an order of completely obedient, uneducated nuns.
Right from the very beginning, I wanted to serve the poor purely for the love of God.
She did want to work with the poor, and most decent people take this to mean that you're interested in reducing poverty. But not Mother Teresa. She was interested in missionary work and nothing more. And as a former member of Christian ministry, I can tell you that the easiest converts are made of those who have nothing or are at their lowest. Christopher Hitchens, the English journalist and anti-theist, wrote a book on Mother Teresa, one of the only critical ones in existence, called The Missionary Position, Mother Teresa in Theory and Practice. Hitchens was called by the Vatican as a witness to give evidence against Mother Teresa during her canonization process, where he had the opportunity to speak to her. He reported, quote, "It was by talking to her that I discovered, and she assured me, that she wasn't working to alleviate poverty. She was working to expand the number of Catholics. She said, 'I'm not a social worker. I don't do it for this reason. I do it for Christ. I do it for the church.'" End quote. So don't take my word for it. Take her word for it. She's not doing social work. She's just trying to make more Catholics. Teresa, the name she took for herself, was the patron saint of missionaries. By the way, Mother Teresa's real name is Agnes Boyacu. And whether or not you think missionary work is a good or bad thing, it's certainly not the reputation of moral, humanitarian selflessness that the world has crafted for her. As Christopher Hitchens put it, she was not a friend of the poor, she was a friend of poverty.
She's only bothered with the agenda of trying to rescue their souls and make them a bit better before they go on to the eternal life, which is a very understandable, but in fact a very old-fashioned Christian idea. It is not a question of saying, how can we tackle the real problems of poverty?
On several occasions, Mother Teresa only offered prayers and medallions of the Virgin Mary to victims of natural disasters in India, rather than actual aid, monetary or otherwise. Mother Teresa's charitable foundations raised hundreds of millions of dollars during her lifetime, but much of that money appears to have vanished in several bank accounts that she apparently kept. This is the money that was supposed to fund proper care for the poor and the sick, and this is certainly what the donors thought the money was going towards. The most probable explanation is that Mother Teresa, over the course of her life, siphoned millions of dollars out of her charities and into the Roman Catholic Church.
Missionaries of Charity is the only Indian charitable organization which do not publish its accounts for the public to obtain them. Much of our foreign money is kept in the Vatican Bank.
Something I didn't quite realize before researching for this episode is what a reality TV star Mother Teresa aspired to be. She seemed to really eat up the attention. Of course, while simultaneously reminding us how humble she was.
You went to Calcutta, you had a 50% chance of running into her, maybe. Much more likely you'd find her with Nancy Reagan or Princess Diana off in some foreign capital beating the bushes and posing for pictures. Or even worse than that, with real crooks and exploiters and robbers of the poor, such as the Duvalier family in Haiti.
He was speaking of the Duvalier dictatorship, which was responsible for the murders of over 30,000 Haitians between 1957 and 1986.
In 1980, she visited the island and accepted the Haitian Legion of Honor Award from Baby Doc Duvalier. She found much to praise in his corrupt, dynastic regime, telling astonished reporters that she had, quote, "never seen the poor people being so familiar with their head of state as they were with the Duvaliers. It was a beautiful lesson for me," she simpered. "I've learned something from it." The Haitian people, indeed, could not wait to get close to the Duvaliers, who in their turn moved forever to the French Riviera.
She also accepted well over $1 million from Charles Keating, the savings and loan fraud in California, who made his money by stealing it from the elderly. In return for his money and lending of his private jet, he got a necklace blessed by Mother Teresa. If that sounds like a modern version of an indulgence, well, at the time, Keating's theft from the elderly was the greatest scandal in American financial history, and once he was imprisoned, she was asked to return the money to those from whom it had been stolen. She declined.
When she got the money from Charles Keating, he hadn't been indicted about anything. He hadn't even been accused of anything. So what was she supposed to do? The money was already spent by the time that we found out that this guy was a crook.
So the Catholic Church didn't have the money to write a check? They're probably the ones who got the money anyway, and... But, I mean, to be fair, it's not as if the Catholic Church spends money on dumb stuff like gigantic, ridiculous gold hats for their leader, or enormous gold chains for him to wear, or a giant gold palace for him to live in. Christopher Hitchens wrote, "This returns us to the medieval corruption of the church, which sold indulgences to the rich while preaching hellfire to the poor." The double standard that Mother Teresa held between the rich and the poor also applied with her regressive positions on women's rights. She campaigned to keep divorce illegal in Ireland, while also congratulating Princess Diana on her divorce, offering her well wishes and saying she hoped it worked out for her. So, a poor woman in Ireland with a wife-beating husband can never hope for anything better, but a wealthy, famous woman can leave for any reason and receive Mother Teresa's stamp of approval. Thankfully, Mother Teresa's shameful efforts to force Catholic morals on the entire population through the state failed, and now women are legally allowed to leave abusive relationships because Mother Teresa did not succeed.
The greatest destroyer of peace today is the cry of the innocent, unborn child. If a mother can murder her own child in her own womb, what is left for you and for me to kill each other?
The greatest threat to world peace is abortion? Look, whatever you think about abortion, you cannot honestly say that it's the number one thing preventing peace in the world. The context of that quote, by the way, is on the subject of Bosnian women who were raped by Serbs and sought abortions. She devoted much of her time not to aiding the poor, unless there were any cameras around to capture the photo op, but rather to campaigning against abortion and contraceptives. Christopher Hitchens wrote, quote, "She spent her life opposing the only known cure for poverty, which is the empowerment of women and the emancipation of them from a livestock version of compulsory reproduction," end quote.
Let us promise Our Lady who loves Ireland so much that we will never allow in this country a single abortion. And no contraceptives.
No abortion and no contraceptives? I mean, these are just right-wing talking points. Isn't she supposed to be some apolitical humanitarian? What does preventing the use of contraceptives have to do with being moral? And keep in mind, she worked in India, one of the most overpopulated places on Earth. This overpopulation greatly contributed to the appalling poverty in India, which she had no interest in alleviating. Her message of no contraceptives did nothing but increase the amount of suffering and poverty in the world, as well as keep women from controlling their own reproduction. If what I'm saying is true, why does she have the reputation she does? Well, I hope I'm not the first to tell you that it's not only possible for circulating stories about even living persons to be less than perfectly true, but often likely. Once a reputation exists, it can be impossible to shake it off. You only need to apply the same skepticism to Mother Teresa as you would to any other person or reputation following them. Mark Twain said, "Give a man a reputation as an early riser, and he can sleep till noon." So, once reputation gets started, it can be easily maintained, but if Mother Teresa had no interest in helping the poor, alleviating suffering, or helping women, or doing anything but be famous and produce more Catholics, how did her reputation begin?
So, how did this auction of hyperbole and credulity get started? In that year of grace, 1969, the scrupulously neutral and objective British Broadcasting Corporation permitted that old fraud and mountebank Malcolm Muggeridge to pay a devotional visit to the Calcutta shrine.
Well, Teresa, when after I met you in London, really the only thing I wanted to do is to come and see you in your work here. Now I've seen it. And of course, it's a shining light.
Muggeridge became persuaded that he and his team had become the divinely appointed instruments of what he claimed was the first television miracle.
In a dark room, God lit up the place with divine light so Mother Teresa's work could be seen. So what did the other people in the crew have to say about this miracle?
During Something Beautiful from God, there was an episode where we were taken to a building that Mother Teresa called the House of the Dying, and Peter Schaefer, the director, said, it's very dark in here, do you think we can get anything? And we had just taken delivery at the BBC of some new film made by Kodak, which we hadn't had time to test before we left, so I said to Peter, well, let's have a go. So we shot it. And when we got back, several weeks later, a month or two later, we're sitting in the Rush's Theatre at Ealing Studios, and eventually up came the shots of the House of the Dying. And it was surprising. You could see every detail. And I said, that's amazing, that's extraordinary. And I was going to go on to say, you know, three cheers for Kodak. I didn't get a chance to say that, though, because Malcolm, sitting in the front row, spun round and said, it's divine light. It's Mother Teresa. You'll find that it's divine light, old boy. And three or four days later, I found I was being phoned by journalists from London newspapers who were saying things like, we hear you've just come back from India with Malcolm Muggeridge, and you were the witness of a miracle.
And a star was born. This profane marriage between tawdry media hype and medieval superstition gave birth to an icon which few have since had the poor taste to question.
Mother Teresa's original fame came from a mistaken miracle. Kodak made some film that works in the dark, and a superstitious director attributed something he couldn't explain to the divine. God of the gaps is a bad argument when we don't know the real answer, but it's unforgivable when there isn't even a gap in the first place. From there, her media appearances increased. For the last few decades of her life, you could find her touring the world in private jets and helicopters, appearing with TV stars and other wealthy and powerful people, raking in donations that never went to the poor. She also makes us feel better about our first world guilt. I mean, there are people starving and dying of cured diseases, and we're wasting money on iPhones and pizzas that could be used to save human lives.
The rich world has a poor conscience. It wants, in fact it needs, to think that someone, somewhere, is doing something about the third world. And the Mother Teresa myth ministers to this desire.
Here is a Western woman who has forsaken her life, albeit whatever life she might have had in Albania, for sacrifice herself for the people of the third world. It makes the West feel better, you know. This is one of us again, once again rescuing the third world.
In addition to the initial miracle that earned Mother Teresa her first primetime slot, she also performs miracles from beyond the grave, apparently. There was one woman who pressed a graven image of Mother Teresa to her tumor, and that tumor went away. I mean, doctors also treated her, but it was probably the magic medallion. Her husband has also gone on record saying that doctors cured his wife.
No, miracles do not occur. Okay? Dead people do not cure living people of disease. It doesn't happen. It's a scandal. Okay? There's no tooth fairy either. Though, I mean, there's no Santa Claus. I have to keep on breaking this stuff to people, and every time they say, well, are you sure? And I say, yes, absolutely I am.
The reason we're even having this discussion is largely in part due to the journalistic efforts of Christopher Hitchens, whose voice you just heard, as well as many other times throughout the show.
So, do you think you're qualified to make such a program? Why did you make it?
Amply qualified, yes.
Well, why did you make it?
Because I've long thought that the Niagara of uncritical publicity with which this woman has been conveyed to us is deceptive and has presented someone who is a selfless and dedicated and tireless worker for Catholic fundamentalism under the cloak, perhaps thrown over her by us rather than by herself. She, I think, is not a hypocrite about it, but presented anyway as someone who does it purely for humanitarian reasons.
I just don't understand.
But in addition to writing the missionary position, he hosted a TV special on Mother Teresa, neither of which earned him many friends. But over time, his account of Mother Teresa has withheld scrutiny, and the weight of evidence continues to pile up on the side of those who see Mother Teresa for what she really was. And that can never be undone.
She probably is the least criticized woman on earth, least criticized human being on earth. We thought we could take that for granted. We put the case against. We didn't pretend to do other than that, which taken together or singly in my submission show that this is a woman with a very strong secular, political, worldly agenda. Future discussion of her will have to take this into account. So we win and you lose.
Okay, I want to thank my new patrons, first time I get to do this. Alec Kosmensky, Juliana, Michelle A., and Ashley Torlone, the four best people of all time. Thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy the early releases and future bonus content. And if you would like to join the ranks of those beautiful people, you can support the show on a per-episode basis at patreon.com/counter, where you can earn early access to every episode in addition to many other benefits. If you don't have the money to support on Patreon, but you still want to pretend to be an atheist to get back at your parents, you can like us on Facebook or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you found this podcast. Feel free to reach out with questions, comments, or topic suggestions using the contact info you can find in the show notes. If you think I've made an error or excluded an important argument for or against what was discussed in this episode, you can voice your opinion publicly on our Facebook page or on emersongreenblog.wordpress.com in the corresponding blog post. Thank you for joining me today. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time we meet to counter apologetics.